Shift is sponsored by Gentex Corporation. Gentex is a longtime supplier of electro-optical products for the global automotive, aerospace, and fire protection industries. Visit Gentex.com to check out the latest in digital vision, connected car, and dimmable glass technologies.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Shift, a podcast about mobility. I'm your host, Pete Bigelow.
Hi, it's Leslie Allen.
Joining us on the podcast today is Sterling Anderson from Aurora and Nils Jaeger from Volvo Autonomous Solutions. We'll be talking about the Aurora-Volvo partnership centered on self-driving trucks. But first, Leslie, how are you today?
I am doing fine, Pete. I'm really anxious to hear your conversation with the gentleman from Volvo and also from Aurora. And I want to know more about this partnership. I mean, why focus on this particular partnership? I know this has to do with semi-trucks. Is that right? And this seems to be an area that is growing when it comes to autonomous technology.
It is, Leslie. It's definitely a red-hot area in terms of self-driving trucking. That's not the only reason why I kind of wanted to do this episode. The other reason was that, obviously, you know this as my editor and boss, but a lot of what we write about is all these partnership announcements. And what we really don't do all that often is follow up on how they're working or get into the weeds a little bit on how these partnerships actually work. So those were the two twin things that I talked to Sterling and Nils about on this particular episode. And it's very interesting to hear about a traditional automotive company and a Silicon Valley startup getting together to do this in a meaningful way.
That should be a very fascinating conversation, Pete. I know we've seen a series, as you mentioned, of these partnerships that have formed between startups and established automakers. Now, one of our guests is Sterling Anderson, and that name just might sound familiar to our listeners. So, Pete, can you tell us a little bit more about Sterling and his history with our podcast?
Sure. I was going to say, you know, his history and biography in general, he played an integral role in the creation of Tesla Autopilot back in the day. That was, of course, before he joined Aurora. But Leslie, also to your point, Sterling was one of the first guests on the Shift podcast. You know, way back in the early days of 2019, I think that must have been.
Pioneer days.
Yes. Yes. And I know, I think we've had maybe two or three people on twice at this point. Michael Dunn from Zozo Go, you know, rings a bell as the other. But not many two-time guests just yet. But, you know, we are you know, pioneering new ground on that front as well. So this is a welcome back to Sterling and a welcome to Nils, and maybe without further ado, we'll go to our conversation. Sterling and Nils, welcome to the podcast. Great to have you on today.
Yeah, thanks. Good to be here.
Thanks for having us. It's a pleasure, and sending my regards from Sweden to you.
Thank you, Nils. Nils, this is your first appearance on the podcast, but I was just looking this up earlier today. Sterling was actually on in our early days. I think it was the fifth or sixth episode. About 2 years ago this time. So Sterling, an official welcome back to you.
Hey, thanks.
You know, maybe this is a great place to dive in. You know, Sterling, we've talked in the past about trucking, and you mentioned that trucking was a first application of Aurora's driver way back when. More recently, I've heard you and Aurora talk about something called self-driving 2.0. And, you know, maybe just to kind of set the stage for our conversation today, what is self-driving 2.0? Is it business related? Is it technology related? Both? How does it play into where we're at today?
Self-driving 2.0 is the moniker that we chose to attempt to describe the collection of technical and commercial approaches that we've taken since we started the company. Whether it's the evolution of the way that we test from heavy focus on empirical brute force on-road development that's been the case for much of the industry historically, to a much more efficient, much more accurate, and much more scalable approach to virtual development, or it's the development of various elements of the self-driving system, from the perception system to the way that we forecast future motion of other actors, to the way that we elegantly interleave machine learning and rigorous engineering in our motion planning system. We've taken an approach technically that we believe will allow for more rapid deployment and scaling of this technology safely on the world's roads. On the commercial side, self-driving 2.0 was the approach that we took from the outset of partnering very deeply with automotive partners, for instance, Volvo Trucks, to bring to bear the best of not just the OEM's technical abilities and their understanding of the vehicle platforms and their ability to adapt and modify them to the needs of the Aurora driver, but also their footprint, their commercial scale, and their ability to better serve the needs of their end customers with the kind of relationships, the trust that they've already built, and leveraging the combination of our respective strengths to deploy a better product faster.
Nils, let's fast forward to this spring when Aurora and Volvo Trucks, or I should say Volvo Autonomous Solutions, and maybe you can tell us how that fits into to the broader Volvo empire. But how did this partnership come about, and what did you look for when looking for partners in the automated technology space?
Yeah, great question. Maybe I begin explaining a little bit first what Volvo Autonomous Solutions is. And we are a separate business area within the Volvo Group. We have 10 in total, so we are one of them. And we have the mission to transform the transport industry with efficient, sustainable, and safe autonomous solutions. And we do that by focusing on specific industry verticals or segments. So we can summarize it. We look into confined first mile and middle mile. Other ways to describe it, we are operating in the mining and quarry segment, where we have autonomous hauling solutions. We're focusing on the ports and logistics centers, and we're looking on at the highway segment, and that's the hub-to-hub highway segment, which we're focusing on first. And with that, our strategy as a group, as Volvo Group, is unique. So we have actually, a situation where we're building knowledge in confined, which we then transfer to logistics and also to hub-to-hub. So there is a lot of learning and there's a lot of opportunities we have actually before we launch hub-to-hub. And this benefits from the learnings is then something which will go live together with hub-to-hub. And when we looked into, the application, specific application for hub-to-hub, we also realized that, this is a really complex area and, something which, where it really makes sense to have a strong partner. And in order for us really to accelerate the deployment of autonomous solutions in that specific space, hub-to-hub, we came to the conclusion we're best suited that we actually partner up. And interestingly, Aurora and Volvo already knew each other. We knew each other since 2018. That's when we had the first project together. Since then we've built a relationship, and since then, we've built trust and we have a good understanding of each other. And at the end of the day, there are a lot of things we both focus on. And one of them, which is our extremely important, is safety. And that, has created, a strong foundation for Aurora and Volvo to work together and then to enter into this partnership at the beginning of the year, or it was end of March when we announced it, was kind of a logical conclusion for me from what we have actually done prior already together.
Nils, let me lay some quick groundwork for those who might not quite understand or wonder what exactly is hub-to-hub.
Yeah, I mean, sorry for that. Yeah, hub-to-hub is what is autonomous driving on U.S. highway to begin with, and you basically transport from one transfer hub to another transfer hub, and usually those transfer hubs are situated close to the highway. So you the autonomous trucks leaves the transfer hub, goes on the highway, and exits then at the next transfer hub. And that's where the autonomous transportation stops, and then the today's normal transportation continues.
Sterling Nils mentioned that Aurora and Volvo have worked together for several years prior to this. So the announcement in some way of the partnership was an endpoint, I think Nils called it. What did you learn working together initially about where you were at circa 2018 and what you kind of still needed to do to make this viable, and how did you go about making those decisions and acquisitions as it may be?
Sure. One of the first things that we look for in developing partnerships with an OEM such as Volvo is shared values, trust, and commitment to a common mission. Volvo has those in spades, right? Is that the deeper we got into the conversation in 2018, the more we realized, look, from the perspective of safety is paramount, from the perspective of commitment to technical excellence in the product that we build together, to many other shared values, it was clear that this was a very well aligned partnership in terms of kind of the approach that they were taking, that we were taking. At the same time, the other thing that became clear is we actually built our first truck together. We went through a bunch of the functional safety work required to design the changes that needed to happen to a truck like that to deploy it safely on the world's highways. There were two things that we knew. One of those was neither Aurora nor any of the rest of the industry had a story for long-range multimodal perception that allowed us to close a safety argument around highway speed navigation of a truck. Right at that time, the best the industry could do reliably on, you know, particularly low reflectivity targets was see on the order of 200 to 250 meters in front of the vehicle. Try to operate any vehicle at 65, 75 miles an hour on a highway, seeing only 200 meters, that's like driving through a dense fog. It would be unsafe for you or I to do it as humans. It's equally unsafe for a self-driving system to attempt such a feat. And so we realized at Aurora that to tell a credible story and build a credible product around the deployment of self-driving trucks at highway speeds, we had to close that gap. At the same time, I think Volvo realized that this was such a unique opportunity that they needed to set up a new business unit specifically to go after it. So in the intervening time from 2018 to today, or to when we reformulated the partnership early this year, there were two major activities that were ongoing. Aurora was securing access and developing a long-range multimodal perception system that can see much, much further than existing systems on the road can see. Volvo was building the VAS business unit. At the culmination of those two things, we at Aurora were ready to declare trucking as our first product because we now had a technical solution that could address it. And Volvo was ready to declare, as Volvo Autonomous Solutions with Nils at the helm, the approach that they would take in partnering with us to deploy it.
Nils, from that business perspective, I know that Volvo Autonomous Solutions, as you mentioned a little bit earlier, works in forestry, mining, some of these other confined areas for where autonomy can be deployed. What learnings, be they on the business end or on the technical side, did you take from those confined experiences and kind of know that you had to refine and work on as you wound toward the partnership reformulating, as Sterling called it, earlier this year?
Yeah, it's a great question. And of course, there's many learnings. And I mean, the verticals we're in, if we talk about mining applications, doing hauling in a quarry, is of course not the long distance as you have in a hub-to-hub environment. And of course, the area is much more protected, and that's why we call it confined. But nevertheless, from the technology, there are of course many demands which then help us also together as we deploy the technology for hub to hub. So, the experience we've built on, how do you actually use a LiDAR in an environment, where you have a lot of dirt, where you have a lot of wind, where you have a lot of potentially salty air, as we are here close to the ocean. So there's a lot of things, which you learn and you might not actually have in mind when you start thinking about how to deploy autonomous technology. But what we also learned, and that is more focusing on the commercial side, is that as you roll out this technology, it is actually something where, particularly in the first years, customers appreciate if you come closer to them. So what we've done here is actually we have went deeper into the value chain. And we have provided a lot of support, or we're providing a lot of support towards our customers, in the sense of that we're going, that we're working with them together as we deploy autonomous solutions. But we provide a whole platform, we provide a whole ecosystem to them. So it's not, usually how we and all the other OEMs have dealt in the past, that we provide a vehicle or a machine. Here we actually provide a transport system or a transport solution. And that is something which is different, something we haven't done before. But I think it is extremely important also for what we're doing together with Aurora when it comes to hub to hub. We are about to transform the industry. I actually don't think we will disrupt it, because it is a gradual process. So that's why I like the term transformation much more. But we wanted to do this together with our customers. I mean, we have very long and very strong customer relationships, and so we want to develop this technology and bring this technology to market together with our customers in a tight collaboration, and that allows then also that we can provide a solution where we can take part of the customer's value chain. And by that, I think we will be able to accelerate the deployment of autonomous solutions and autonomous technology overall, because our customers are actually looking for that. They're looking for us and doing this together with them. And I think that is the strength we bring, because we're doing this already today in the confined segment. We have a lot of learnings there, which we will also bring then forward to the commercial operations we will do together in the US.
So Nils, if I put a finer point on that a little bit, or to emphasize that, what you're saying is you're not selling a truck and forgetting about it. You are providing trucking as a service, or autonomy as a service, and that's the business model going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. So it is as you say. Our model is transport as a service, and we aim to provide a much broader offer to our customers than before. But it is up to the customer to decide what components of the offer is taking. It's not that we aim to take over or to compete. Not at all. We want to complement, and we want to offer autonomous transport solutions where we create value together with the customer. So that's a very important part of the message too.
Sterling, there's two different spectrums in the industry right now as to exactly how integrated automated technology companies such as Aurora and OEMs need to be to make this viable at mass scale. So from a range of being part of the same company and nothing short of that, to just taking a automated driver and retrofitting on top of an existing vehicle. How do you choose where you want to dial that needle?
Yeah, deep integration is really important. And we recognize that from the outset. And in doing so, we've developed what we call the Aurora Driver Development Program. This program specifically is a structured approach to detailed co-development of everything from the vehicle platform and its respective mechanical, electrical, thermal, logical interfaces to the Aurora driver in such a way that it minimizes the distractions to the team developing the core of the Aurora driver system, while also allowing Aurora to work efficiently with partners and provide up front much of these requirements in a very mature way. And so this has been, a boon to partnerships like ours with Volvo, is the ability to bring to bear years of experience in developing, I think at this point, on the order of 8 different vehicles with half a dozen different OEMs. We've incorporated the learnings to adapt the kind of Aurora driver interfaces, functional requirements, non-functional requirements, such that when we work together, we're starting from a position of substantial experience and maturity with what it's going to take in terms of adaptations to the vehicle platform. In the partnership, we learn from Volvo as well as to the additional capabilities, features, use cases that their customers are going to want to see from this. And we continue to adapt, mature, and augment the Aurora Driver Development Program and its requirements to that. So we think there's a very healthy middle ground here, which is clean interfaces, mature documentation of those interfaces, and then deep partnership between our respective engineering teams, who have, I suppose, at this point between Aurora and Volvo, they've probably spent upwards of tens of thousands of hours together collectively in working through kind of these interfaces and the technical adaptations to both the truck and the driver.
And Nils, from a Volvo perspective, did you have was that one of the early alignments on both you and Aurora, knowing how shallow or deep you wanted this integration to be?
Yes, of course. That is one of the advantages we had, that we both knew each other well before, and that we have a good understanding of how deep this integration shall be, and that we have had a joint understanding on that pretty much from the start, and that understanding was then actually the basis for us to conclude an agreement and also now to develop the technology together.
Sterling, from a technical perspective, what does this trucking platform look like? How do you really engineer in that the redundancy that's needed to make this viable?
Yeah. For decades, vehicles, trucks have been designed specifically for a human. Right? This is why windshields are where they are. It's why, glass is where it is, pedals, steering wheels, they're all designed specifically to a human interface. Similarly, the actuation of the vehicle, which is to say the motors, the gears that are in place to allow a human to control things like steering and braking, are designed specifically such that should they fail or should power be lost to them, a human can effectively muscle through and still control the vehicle. This is why physical linkages still exist between steering wheels and front wheels, right? It's why, the typically hydraulic or other systems allow for kind of muscling through a brake, at least to have some power in the event of a failure. Now, the issue with a self-driving system is a couple-fold. First, its interfaces are different. It doesn't have hands. It doesn't have feet physically. And it also doesn't have the ability to power through losses of power or losses of primary actuation systems. And so the changes that need to be made to a truck to adapt to a self-driving system simply entail redesigning its interfaces such that in place of the interfaces that were there for humans, the appropriate ones exist for the autonomous system. This includes packaging the sensors, finding a location for the computer, redesigning the electrical architecture to ensure that should one channel fail, power is retained on other rails to allow for control of the actuators. It's even designing in, as you say, redundancy to certain elements like the actuators. But it goes far beyond that, right? It's collaboration on the telemetry the vehicle provides, wheel encoders, other instrumentation on the vehicle, such that the self-driving system has access to all the information it needs to make the appropriate decisions. And so this is the whole ball of work that's involved in a partnership like the one that we have together, is the design of that vehicle platform to adapt it specifically to the self-driving system and its requirements.
Sterling, if I can stick with you for a second, how parallel is this to what you have to do with passenger cars to build in the same redundancies, or is it very different because you're dealing with a vehicle that has a trailer and there's just a weight difference? How similar or different is it compared to the passenger car path?
Yeah, by design, we have created a common core of the Aurora Driver, which uses effectively the same hardware and literally the same software to control trucks as cars. And the result of this is that the integration with the vehicle leans on the same safety framework, which we released a couple of weeks ago. It relies on a very, very similar set of requirements for the base vehicle platform, right? These interfaces, the telemetry, the redundancies, the power distribution system, these are all common in terms of requirements for the Aurora Driver, whether it's implemented in a truck or implemented in a passenger vehicle. Now, there are differences in the behavior, in particular, kinodynamically for a truck versus a passenger vehicle. As you mentioned, trucks tend to articulate. Trucks are much heavier. And so parametrically, they'll behave in a slightly different way in response to a given input. For that, we've designed a control system for these vehicles that adapts to the vehicle that it's operating, right? So it learns the parameters of the truck, it learns the parameters of the car, and it appropriately adapts its control inputs to ensure that when operating either, it's commanding the appropriate acceleration, the appropriate braking, the appropriate steering as to the needs of that particular vehicle. So we've designed it to be as common as possible between the two. And there's a real benefit there, which is, you know, and we realized this in 2018 in the creation of the first Volvo truck. It took us on the order of a few weeks to integrate the Aurora Driver hardware into it. And from that point, we took it to a track, put it alongside a passenger vehicle that had been driving for a couple of years at that point. And off they went, and they were performing the same maneuvers, right? Effectively, the truck inherited all the learnings that the Aurora Driver had accrued on the car. And similarly, we expect this leapfrogging to continue. When we deploy our first self-driving trucks, much of the experience they gain on the world's highways, much of the performance and safety guarantees that they prove out will carry directly into the passenger vehicle product as well.
We're going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsor, and we'll be right back with Pete's interview with Sterling and Nils.
This episode is sponsored by Gentex Corporation, a global technology company that supplies nearly every major automaker with advanced electronic features that optimize driver vision and enhance driving safety. Digital vision features like Gentex's full display mirror, an intelligent rear vision system that uses a custom camera and mirror-integrated video display to optimize a vehicle's rearward view. Connected car features like HomeLink, the industry's most widely used and trusted vehicle-based wireless control system that uses radio frequency and/or cloud-based wireless control to operate garage doors, gates, home lighting, thermostats, security systems, and other compatible home automation devices, all from three buttons smartly integrated into your vehicle's interior. And dimmable glass features like automatic dimming rear view mirrors that use sophisticated light sensors, proprietary gels, and microprocessor-based algorithms to darken the mirror to the precise level necessary to eliminate dangerous rear view mirror glare. The development and delivery of these features has improved driver convenience and safety around the world. Visit gentex.com to check out the latest in digital vision, connected car, and dimmable glass technologies.
Now, back to our conversation with Sterling and Nils.
How much of a head start does Volvo Autonomous Solutions already have in working with customers? And what are kind of the pain points that you hear from them today that this practically addresses?
One pain point we have, of course, and that is almost all around the world, is that we have a shortage of drivers. And that, of course, limits transportation, that limits trade, and that, of course, is not good for anyone. And, you know, by providing the first autonomous trucking solution, we, of course, will take away the part of the pain of today with the shortage of drivers. And, of course, here we aim to launch the first route where it makes most sense, where we provide the most value, and where we really come with a purpose. And here we have discussions with our customers, which are where is actually the shortage the biggest, or where is the demand pressing in order to have the right priorities. So these are the discussions we're having right now with our customers. But overall, you know, what I said earlier when I talked about transport as a service, there is still in the and will be in the first years of this technology, you know, it is something which is, you know, complex. It's not always easy to understand. And then to do this together with the customers, to do this transformation together, is something they appreciate and they look forward to, that that we are, you know, doing this together with them.
Sterling, before you mentioned the Aurora Safety Case Framework, and before we get too far ahead, I'd love to hear if you could just explain what that is a little bit, and you know, how does that apply to trucking in a way that might be different from passenger cars?
Yeah. So as I mentioned, it's we've designed it along with Common Core, the driver, to be common between trucking and pass car, and there's real value there. Right? There's value to creating a structure so that the framework specifically is a structured argument for why the Aurora driver, inclusive of the vehicle that it operates, is safe and does not present an unreasonable risk to public road safety. This is really, really important when deploying a product in this space. It's something that my expectation is anyone who wants to deploy said product with the blessing of both regulatory authorities and the general public has to be very thoughtful about, has to be very explicit about, both in terms of laying out the argument, but also laying out the evidence for why that argument has been satisfied. That's what this framework is it's a structured approach, the first in the industry that provides clear argumentation as to why, from a functional safety perspective, from a safety of the intended function perspective, and from a kind of cultural organizational safety perspective, the product that we are delivering is safe. And this is, you know, this is striking to me. Years ago, my wife was taking one of my daughters to school, and she crossed the street in front of a self-driving test vehicle. It wasn't one of ours. But as she crossed the street in front of it, she was alarmed to see the driver have to take over and brake suddenly and just avoid colliding with her. And the first thing I heard about that evening was, don't you ever make anyone else's child the unwitting subject of your tests without talking with them clearly about how it is that you're ensuring their safety in doing that development. That's really important to me. It's really important to us. And so part of leading with transparency here in co-founding the Partners for Automated Vehicle Education, in releasing the first ever safety framework, in creating many of the tools, argumentation, and structured evidence for why, how we're doing what we're doing, and why that is safe, is really, really important. Because again, we share the roadways with people, and we have to. I think it's incumbent on us that we are transparent with those people as to how what it is we're doing is safe and how it's going to make their lives better. And you know, Neil's touched on kind of a big part of that in the trucking space. There are, you know, a variety of ways that, from a kind of improved safety eventually perspective, improved efficiency, the ability to move goods much, much more quickly when you're not subject to the hours of service limitations that constrain human drivers. These are all kind of major benefits to society that we expect this to accrue.
Neil, perhaps you can take the baton on that. Exactly how big is the business opportunity that you see ahead?
Yeah, I think that's a question, or that is a market opportunity which will definitely grow over time as we develop the technology further. We said that initially we will, you know, launch certain hubs, and then, you know, we will, together with Aurora, we will you know, increase those hubs and move them across the US. So, the U.S. transportation market is the largest in the world. And that, of course, implies in itself that it is a very, very big opportunity for us. But again, it's something which we will develop over time. I think it will be gradual. It will not happen overnight. And initially, we will focus on hub to hub. But then we know that there's, other applications. The last mile is of course, also a big opportunity. So there's more to come, and I think you can look at various reports on how sizable the opportunity is. But I think it is something which, you know, we will not see that happening overnight. It is gradual, and it will be a transformation. And the important thing is, however, that we do this together with our customers. But also, I think that I want to emphasize what Sterling said. I mean, we need to do this in a way that really the society understands that we add safety. And it's not only about efficiency, it's also about adding safety. You know, we want to put something out there which is safer than the human being. And that is so important that we communicate that. And that's all of us in the industry. Because at the end, society needs to buy in. And that also means that we need to convince them that we're doing here the right thing and that we have safety as the top priority.
So you mentioned a gradual rollout here. Can I pin you down a little bit on where and when does that start? And, you know, is there any way to codify how that gradual rollout takes place?
Yeah, you know, if there would be no travel limitations to the U.S., then at the end of this month, I would actually be in person together with Sterling in Texas to have an event there. Unfortunately, I cannot attend, but by that, you know where we will start, and that is Texas. And I think that is, you know, we're probably not the only ones focusing on that one, but that is a large transportation hub in the U.S. You also have favorable legislation there and regulation there, which helps to start. And I think that's the nucleus. And from there, it will grow and develop over time. But starting point is Texas.
I'm curious. You brought up an interesting question in my mind. You're not traveling right now. How, from a practical perspective, how do your engineering teams work together on this integration right now? Where are they located and or co-located, and how is this work getting done?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. Volvo has teams all over the world, but the engineering work is done mainly here in Gothenburg, but we also do provide work here in out of Greensboro, North Carolina, and Volvo Autonomous Solutions also has a site in the Silicon Valley. But it is a lot of things which are done virtual, and that actually works very well. We sometimes have actually the advantage that, you know, certain things are finished, you know, at our end of the day, and then we hand it over, and then, you know, the U.S. has just got up, and then, you know, they continue to work on it, and then the next day we can pick it up again. So it actually works pretty good. But of course, like all of us, we long also for more face-to-face meetings, and that's something which, of course, we will add more in the coming time as it becomes more possible now. But so far, we have actually been working extremely well over virtual means. One reason is, however, that people knew each other before, and you know, there is a long history. And that has helped, of course, and gave us a kind of a running start, actually.
Sterling, do you have perspective on that? And I'm curious, maybe along similar lines, has COVID in any way changed your on-road testing plan?
So on-road testing is something that we, from the outset of Aurora, have been deliberate about in terms of how we use vehicles in the world versus how we develop kind of a virtual test environment. We've leaned heavily into the latter. And the reason for that is if you want to validate, which is to say confirm that a self-driving system operates, for instance, at the level of safety equivalent to a human, statistically, you need to have collected what tends towards between 1 and 10 billion miles of on-road data. Not only that, you needed to collect those with the same suite of hardware and software. Can't make changes halfway through. Now, at the rate that we could be collecting that data, even with 100 trucks on the world's roads, in a year, we'd be just over 1% of that total. And we couldn't change the software, right? So we're talking many, many years if brute force on-road testing were the approach. And it's extraordinarily inefficient. Effectively, a software engineer, for instance, makes a change to the code. In this regime, kicks out a dev test request that goes out to a collection of trucks that go out and drive on the world's roadways for X hours, right? Call it a few. They encounter a very, very small subset of what the world's roadways could have looked like. They certainly don't encounter all of the various edge and corner cases that could be encountered in the world. And when they come back, they say, hey, we had, you know, this problem and that problem. We had to disengage this system for whatever reasons. And the engineer says, okay, interesting. Well, I'll try and address those. Now, the problem is with each change that the engineer is introducing, there is a possibility for regressions elsewhere, which is to say, I make things better here, and a situation that I may not have encountered at all in this test just got worse. We just failed somewhere, and I don't even know about it. And I'm not going to know about it for, you know, potentially a long time until we actually encounter that situation. So at Aurora, what we developed is a virtual testing suite that allows us to collect and permute a much larger suite of real-world incidents into a database that against which we can test virtually and in parallel. So for instance, if a software engineer at Aurora makes a change to the software, instead of kicking out a brute force test like I described, they kick it out to a highly developed virtual testing suite that runs in parallel in the cloud. And it runs effectively the equivalent of 50,000 trucks at any one instant, encountering not just the kind of mundane situations that a truck on a road would encounter, but many of the interesting events that would be very rare to encounter on road. And the result is within, you know, X minutes, they get a report back that says those equivalent of 50,000 trucks in all of these scenarios, here's everywhere where you pass, here's everywhere where you failed. By the way, you pass, you know, more new incidents, more new scenarios than what you just introduced regressions for, but you got to address these regressions. And so it allows a far more efficient, far more rapid approach to development and ultimately validation in a way that doesn't require, you know, decades of on-road brute force driving, but instead much less time in a virtual environment.
Gentlemen, I know our time is running short, so I have one last question for Nils, and maybe this goes back to the very beginning, but Nils, I know you were at John Deere prior to joining Volvo, and you lived in Des Moines, Iowa for a period of time. I'm curious, you know, I think of John Deere as really an interesting company because it might be the first company to put autonomous and connected cars into commercial practice. But obviously we're talking about, you know, agricultural applications. I'm curious, when was it that you first saw, you know, the potential or the light bulb went off that this could really someday be a public road technology?
I think this is, you know, something I've actually wondered myself. When was that? Because when I worked at Deere in the past, you know, it was early in my career when GPS steered tractors came to market, and at that time I was, you know, a young guy working in the sales marketing arena, and our focus was at that time really to introduce this new technology to the customers, and it wasn't that easy to begin with because of the complexity, etc. But of course it became a success. However, if you think of agriculture, then you know an agricultural field is usually a very confined space, and to transform that technology that it would be, you know, deployable on public roads, I think it was clear at that time already that is quite a journey and a very complex task. I don't think at that time I wondered when it will be, but when I then started working at Volvo, you know, I at one point in time looked back and said, okay, you've made actually that experience once that this technology or similar technology, I should say, was deployed, and what is it actually you can use for that in this environment at Volvo? And of course, there are learnings and there are experiences you make which are important. And maybe, you know, there's one thing I'd actually like to add on to this discussion we were having today, and it's you know, an important point for me. It's about the integration of how we work and together, Aurora and Volvo, and it's a lot about the integration of the virtual driver into the truck. And I just want to point out that today, of course, our trucks are recognized as an example of industry excellence, and that is actually around the world. But now we're building our future L4 trucks with more quality and with the autonomous driving features, which are fully integrated in our manufacturing lines. And I think important in the cooperation and the collaboration between Aurora and Volvo is that our engineers, they have a real deep understanding of all kind of truck maneuvers, of all kind of setups, configurations and loads and all of that on various kinds of road surfaces. And I think it is a knowledge which is very critical for both of us to build then a real world L4 solution. And the timing now is perfect. Volvo is building now a new innovative architecture for all of our truck brands. And it is the perfect opportunity to include then the L4 features directly into that stream. And that is, of course, a strength for both of us, and in particular for the partnership between Aurora and Volvo.
Sterling, how do you at Aurora kind of take those learnings from the Volvo engineering team over the years on what Nils just mentioned in terms of road surfaces and load factors, and how does that get integrated into the driver?
Yeah, it becomes part of the verification validation program that we're creating together, right? So I mentioned our kind of approach to virtual development. That's not to say that we don't do on-road development as well, whether it's track testing with Volvo, whether it's kind of public road pilots that we run with our customers. So these conditions, these circumstances, these use cases get incorporated into our suite of tests, whether they're virtual or physical, that become part of the validation program to confirm the safety and the performance of the platform before it launches.
Gentlemen, thanks so much for the time this afternoon. I really appreciate you taking the time to go into the weeds a little bit on what's been a very interesting partnership to watch from the outside.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Pete, great conversation. Love anytime we get a chance to talk to Sterling Anderson and our new friend, Nils Jaeger. So tell us what's coming up next week.
Sure thing, Leslie. Next week, we're going to take a pause from ground-based mobility and go back into the air. We will be talking with Jeffrey Bauer, who is the chief engineer of Archer Aviation. The company just reached a big regulatory milestone that he'll tell us about, and kind of delve into further plans on their aircraft called the Maker. So definitely hope our listeners tune back in for that next week. That is it for today. Big thank you to our producer, Eric Jones, and we'll see you all next week.